Chapter 47. The grave is no bar to my call. Matt and Perrin were mounted by the time Rand and Huron reached them. Far behind him, Rand heard Ingtar's voice rise.
The light and Shinawa!
The clash of steel joined the roar of other voices.
Where's Ingtar? Matt shouted. What's going on?
He had the horn of Valyr lashed to the high pommel of his saddle as if it were just any horn, but the dagger was in his belt, the ruby-tipped hilt, cupped protectively in a pale hand that seemed made of nothing but bone and sinew.
He's dying, Rand said harshly as he swung onto Red's back. Then we have to help him, Perrin said. Matt can take the horn and the dagger onto... He is doing it so we can all get away, Rand said.
For that too.
We will all take the horn to Varen, and then you can help her take it wherever she says it belongs.
What do you mean? Perrin asked.
Rand dug his heels into the bay's flanks, and Red leaped away toward the hills beyond the town.
The light and Shinawa!
Ingtar's shout soared after him, sounding triumphant, and lightning crashed across the sky in answer. Rand whipped Red with his reins, then lay against the stallion's neck as the bay laid out in a dead run, mane and tail streaming. He wished he did not feel as if he were running away from Ingtar's cry, running from what he was supposed to do.
Ingtar, a dark friend. I don't care, he was still my friend.
The bay's gallop could not take him away from his own thoughts.
Death is lighter than a feather, duty heavier than a mountain. So many duties. Egwene, the horn, Fane, Matt and his dagger. Why can't there just be one at a time? I have to take care of all of them. Oh, light, Egwene.
He reined in so suddenly that Red slid to a halt, sitting back on his haunches. They were in a scanty copse of bare-branched trees atop one of the hills overlooking Falma. The others galloped up behind him.
What do you mean? Perrin demanded. We can help Varen take the horn where it's supposed to go. Where are you going to be?
Maybe he's going mad already, Matt said. He wouldn't want to stay with us if he was going mad, would you, Rand?
You three take the horn to Varen, Rand said.
Egwene, so many threads in so much danger, so many duties.
You do not need me.
Matt caressed the dagger's hilt.
That's all very well, but what about you?
Burn me, you can't be going mad yet, you can't.
Huron gaped at them, not understanding half of it.
I'm going back, Rand said. I should never have left.
Somehow, that did not sound exactly right in his own ears. It did not feel right inside his head.
I have to go back, now.
That sounded better.
Egwene is still there, remember? With one of those collars around her neck.
Are you sure? Matt said. I never saw her.
Ah, if you say she is there, then she's there. We'll all take the horn to Varen, and then we will all go back for her. You don't think I would leave her there, do you?
Rand shook his head.
Threads. Duties.
He felt as if he were about to explode like a firework.
Light, what's happening to me?
Matt.
Varen must take you and that dagger to Tar'Valon, so you can finally be free of it. You don't have any time to waste. Saving Egwene isn't wasting time.
But Matt's hand had tightened on the dagger till it shook.
We aren't any of us going back, Perrin said. Not yet. Look.
He pointed back toward Falma. The wagon yards and horse lots were turning black with Seanchan soldiers. Thousands of them rank on rank, with troops of cavalry riding scaled beasts as well as armored men on horses, colorful gonfalons marking the officers. Grom dotted the ranks, and other strange creatures, almost but not quite like monstrous birds and lizards, and great things like nothing he could describe, with gray wrinkled skin and huge tusks. At intervals along the lines stood Suldam and Damani by the score. Rand wondered if Egwene were one of them. In the town behind the soldiers, a rooftop still exploded now and again, and lightning still streaked the sky. Two flying beasts with leathery wings, 20 spans tip to tip, soared high overhead, keeping well away from where the bright bolts danced.
All that for us? Matt said incredulously. Who do they think we are?
An answer came to Rand, but he shoved it away before it had a chance to form completely.
We aren't going the other way either, Lord Rand, Huron said. White cloaks. Hundreds of them. Rand wheeled his horse to look where the sniffer was pointing. A long, white-cloaked line rippled slowly toward them across the hills.
Lord Rand, Hiran muttered, if that lot lays an eye on the Horn of Valir, we'll never get it close to an Aes Sedai. We'll never get close to it again ourselves.
Maybe that's why the Seanchan are gathering, Matt said hopefully, because of the White Cloaks. Maybe it doesn't have anything to do with us at all.
Whether it does or not, Perrin said dryly, there is going to be a battle here in a few minutes.
Either side could kill us, Hiran said, even if they never see the Horn. If they do.
Rand could not manage to think about the White Cloaks or the Seanchan.
I have to go back. Have to.
He was staring at the Horn of Valir, he realized. They all were. The curled golden horn hung at Matt's pommel, the focus of every eye.
It has to be there at the last battle, Matt said, licking his lips.
Nothing says it can't be used before then.
He pulled the horn free of its lashings and looked at them anxiously.
Nothing says it can't.
No one else said anything. Rand did not think he could speak. His own thoughts were too urgent to allow room for speech.
Have to go back. Have to go back.
The longer he looked at the horn, the more urgent his thoughts became.
Have to. Have to.
Matt's hand shook as he raised the Horn of Valir to his lips. It was a clear note, golden as the horn was golden. The trees around them seemed to resonate with it, and the ground under their feet, the sky overhead. That one long sound encompassed everything. Out of nowhere, a fog began to rise. First thin wisps hanging in the air, then thicker billows, and thicker, until it blanketed the land like clouds. Jefram Bornhald stiffened in his saddle as a sound filled the air. So sweet he wanted to laugh, so mournful he wanted to cry. It seemed to come from every direction at once. A mist began to rise, growing even as he watched.
The Seanchan, they are trying something. They know we are here.
It was too soon, the town too far, but he drew his sword. A clatter of scabbards ran down the rank of his half-legion and called,
The legion will advance at a trot.
The fog covered everything now, but he knew Falma was still there ahead. The pace of the horses picked up. He could not see them, but he could hear. Abruptly, the ground ahead flew up with a roar, showering him with dirt and pebbles. From the white blindness to his right, he heard another roar, and men and horses screamed. Then from his left, and again. Again. Thunder and screams hidden by the fog.
The legion will charge!
His horse leaped forward as he dug in his heels, and he heard the roar as the legion, as much of it as still lived, followed. Thunder and screams, wrapped in whiteness. His last thought was regret. Byr would not be able to tell his son Dane how he had died. Rand could not see the trees around them any longer. Matt had lowered the horn, eyes wide with awe, but the sound of it still rang in Rand's ears. The fog hid everything in rolling waves, as white as the finest bleached wool. Yet Rand could see. He could see, but it was mad. Falma floated somewhere beneath him, its landward border black with the Seanchan ranks, lightning ripping its streets. Falma hung over his head. There, white cloaks charged and died as the earth opened in fire beneath their horses' hooves. There, men ran about the decks of tall, square ships in the harbor, and on one ship, a familiar ship, fearful men waited. He could even recognize the face of the captain, Bale Doman. He clutched his head with both hands. The trees were hidden, but he could still see each of the others clearly. Huron anxious, Matt muttering, fearful. Perrin looking as if he knew this was meant to be. The fog roiled up all around them. Huron gasped.
Lord Rand.
There was no need for him to point. Down the billowing fog, as if it were the side of a mountain, rode shapes on horses. At first, the dense mists hid more than that, but slowly they came closer, and it was Rand's turn to gasp. He knew them. Men, not all in armor, and women. Their clothes and their weapons came from every age, but he knew them all. Rogosh Eagle-Eye, a fatherly-looking man with white hair and eyes so sharp as to make his name merely a hint.
Gaidal Kane, a swarthy man with the hilts of his two swords sticking above his broad shoulders. Golden-haired Brigitta, with her gleaming silver bow and quiver bristling with silver arrows. More. He knew their faces, knew their names. But he heard 100 names when he looked at each face, some so different he did not recognize them as names at all, though he knew they were. Michael instead of Mikkel. Patrick instead of Pedrig. Oscar instead of Otarin. He knew the man who rode at their head, too. Tall and hook-nosed, with dark, deep-set eyes, his great sword Justice at his side. Arthur Hawkwing. Matt gaped at them as they reined in before him and the others.
Is this all of you?
They were little more than 100, Rand saw, and realized that somehow he had known that they would be. Urin's mouth hung open. His eyes bulged almost out of his head.
It takes more than bravery to bind a man to the horn.
Archer Hawkwing's voice was deep and carrying, a voice used to giving commands.
Or a woman, Brigitta said sharply.
Or a woman, Hawkwing agreed. Only a few are bound to the wheel, spun out again and again to work the will of the wheel and the pattern of the ages. You could tell him, Luz Theron, could you but remember when you wore flesh?
He was looking at Rand. Rand shook his head, but he would not waste time with denials.
Invaders have come, men who call themselves Seanchan, who used chained Aes Sedai in battle. They must be driven back into the sea, and there is a girl, Egwene Alvir, a novice from the White Tower. The Seanchan have taken her prisoner. You must help me free her.
To his surprise, several of the small host behind Arthur Hawkwing chuckled, and Brigitta, testing her bowstring, laughed.
You always choose women who cause you trouble, Luz Theron.
It had a fond sound, as between old friends.
My name is Randall Thor, he snapped. You have to hurry. There isn't much time.
Time? Brigitta said, smiling. We have all of time.
Gaidal Kane dropped his reins and, guiding his horse with his knees, drew a sword in either hand. All along the small band of heroes, there was an unsheathing of swords, an unlimbering of bows, a hefting of spears and axes. Justice shone like a mirror in Arthur Hawkwing's gauntleted fist.
I have fought by your side times beyond number, Luz Theron, and faced you as many more. The wheel spins us out for its purposes, not ours, to serve the pattern. I know you if you do not know yourself. We will drive these invaders out for you.
His warhorse pranced, and he looked around, frowning.
Something is wrong here. Something holds me.
Suddenly he turned his sharp-eyed gaze on Rand.
You are here. Have you the banner?
A murmur ran through those behind him.
Yes.
Rand tore open the straps of his saddlebags and pulled out the dragon's banner. It filled his hands and hung almost to his stallion's knees. The murmur among the heroes rose.
The pattern weaves itself around our necks like halters, Arthur Hawkwing said. You are here. The banner is here. The weave of this moment is set. We have come to the horn, but we must follow the banner and the dragon.
Huron made a faint sound as if his throat had seized.
Burn me, Matt breathed. It's true. Burn me.
Perrin hesitated only an instant before swinging down off his horse and striding into the mist. There came a chopping sound, and when he returned, he carried a straight length of sapling shorn of its branches.
Give it to me, Rand, he said gravely. If they need it, give it to me.
Hastily, Rand helped him tie the banner to the pole. When Perrin remounted, pole in hand, a current of air seemed to ripple the pale length of the banner, so the serpentine dragon appeared to move alive. The wind did not touch the heavy fog, only the banner.
You stay here, Rand told Huron. When it's over, you'll be safe here.
Huron drew his short sword, holding it as if it might actually be of some use from horseback.
Begging your pardon, Lord Rand, but I think not. I don't understand the 10th part of what I've heard, or what I'm seeing.
His voice dropped to a mutter before picking up again.
But I've come this far, and I think I'll go the rest of the way.
Arter Hawkwing clapped the sniffer on the shoulder.
Sometimes the wheel adds to our number, friend. Perhaps you will find yourself among us one day.
Huron sat up as if he had been offered a crown. Hawkwing bowed formally from his saddle to Rand.
With your permission, Lord Rand. Trumpeter, will you give us music on the horn? Fitting that the Horn of Valir should sing us into battle. Bannerman, will you advance?
Matt sounded the horn again, long and high. The mists rang with it, and Perrin heeled his horse forward. Rand drew the Heronmark blade and rode between them. He could see nothing but thick billows of white, but somehow he could still see what he had before, too. Falma, where someone used the power in the streets, and the harbor, and the Seanchan host, and the dying white cloaks. All of it beneath him. All of him hanging above. All of it just as it had been. It seemed as if no time at all had passed since the horn was first blown, as though time had paused while the heroes answered the call and now resumed counting. The wild cries Matt wrung from the horn echoed in the fog and the drumming of hooves as the horses picked up speed. Rand charged into the mists, wondering if he knew where he was headed. The clouds thickened, hiding the far ends of the rank of heroes galloping to either side of him, obscuring more and more till he could see only Matt and Perrin and Huron clearly. Huron crouched low in his saddle, wide-eyed, urging his horse on. Matt sounding the horn and laughing between. Perrin, his yellow eyes glowing, the dragon's banner streaming behind him. Then they were gone too, and Rand rode on alone, as it seemed. In a way, he could still see them, but now it was the way he could see Falma and the Seanchan. He could not tell where they were or where he was. He tightened his grip on his sword, peered into the mists ahead. He charged alone through the fog, and somehow he knew that was how it was meant to be. Suddenly Baalzamon was before him in the mists, throwing his arms wide. Red reared wildly, hurling Rand from his saddle. Rand clung to his sword desperately as he soared. It was not a hard landing. In fact, he thought, with a sense of wonder, that it was very much like landing on nothing at all. One instant he was sailing through the mists, and the next he was not. When he climbed to his feet, his horse was gone, but Baalzamon was still there, striding toward him with a long, black-charred staff in his hands. They were alone, only they and the rolling fog. Behind Baalzamon was Shadow. The mist was not dark behind him. This blackness excluded the white fog. Rand was aware of other things, too. Arter Hawkwing and the other heroes meeting the Seanchan in dense fog. Perrin with the banner swinging his axe more to fend off those who tried to reach him than harm them. Matt still blowing wild notes on the Horn of Valir. Huron down from his saddle, fighting with short sword and swordbreaker in the way he knew. It seemed as if the Seanchan numbers would overwhelm them in one rush, yet it was the dark-armored Seanchan who fell back. Rand went forward to meet Baalzamon. Reluctantly, he assumed the void, reached for the true source, was filled with the one power. Perhaps he had no chance against the Dark One, but whatever chance he did have lay in the power. It soaked into his limbs, seemed to suffuse everything about him, his clothes, his sword. He felt as if he should be glowing like the sun. It thrilled him. It made him want to vomit.
Get out of my way, he grated. I am not here for you.
The girl?
Baalzamon laughed. His mouth turned to flame. His burns were all but healed, leaving only a few pink scars that were already fading. He looked like a handsome man of middle years, except for his mouth and his eyes.
Which one, Luz Theron? You will not have anyone to help you this time. You are mine or you are dead. In which case, you are mine anyway.
Liar!
Rand snarled. He struck at Baalzamon, but the staff of charred wood turned his blade in a shower of sparks.
Father of lies! Fool! Did those other fools you summoned not tell you who you are?
The fires of Balzamon's face roared with laughter. Even floating in emptiness, Rand felt a chill.
Would they have lied? I don't want to be the dragon reborn.
He firmed his grip on his sword, parting the silk, but Baalzamon beat every cut aside. Sparks flew as from a blacksmith's forge and hammer.
I have business in Falma, and none with you. Never with you, Rand said.
I have to hold his attention until I can free Egwene. In that odd way, he could see the battle rage among the fog-shrouded wagon yards and horse lots.
You pitiful wretch. You have sounded the horn of Valyr. You are linked to it now. Do you think the worms of the White Tower will ever release you now? They will put chains around your neck so heavy you will never cut them.
Rand was surprised he felt it inside the void. He doesn't know everything. He doesn't know. He was sure it must show on his face. To cover it, he rushed at Balsamon. Hummingbird kisses the honey rose, the moon on the water. The swallow rides the air. Lightning arched between sword and staff. Coruscating glitter showered the fog. Yet Balsamon fell back, his eyes blazing in furious furnaces. At the edge of his awareness, Rand saw the Seanchan falling back in the streets of Falma, fighting desperately. Damani tore the earth with the one power, but it could not harm Artur Hawkwing, nor the other heroes of the Horn.
"Will you remain a slug beneath a rock?" Balsamon snarled. The darkness behind him boiled and stirred. "You kill yourself while we stand here. The power rages in you. It burns you. It's killing you. I alone in the world can teach you how to control it. Serve me and live. Serve me or die. Never!"
"Have to hold him long enough. Hurry, Hawkwing, hurry." He launched himself at Balsamon again. The dove takes flight. The falling leaf. This time it was he who was driven back. Dimly he saw the Seanchan fighting their way back in among the stables. He redoubled his efforts. The Kingfisher takes a silverback. The Seanchan gave way to a charge, Artur Hawkwing and Perrin side by side in the van. Bundling straw. Balsamon caught his blow in a fountain like crimson fireflies, and he had to leap away before the staff split his head. The wind of the blow ruffled his hair. The Seanchan surged forward, striking the spark. Sparks flew like hail. Balsamon jumped from his stroke, and the Seanchan were driven back to the cobblestone streets. Rand wanted to howl aloud. Suddenly he knew that the two battles were linked. When he advanced, the heroes called by the horn drove the Seanchan back. When he fell back, the Seanchan rose up.
"They will not save you," Balsamon said. "Those who might save you will be carried far across the Arith Ocean. If ever you see them again, they will be collared slaves, and they will destroy you for their new masters."
"Egwene, I can't let them do that to her."
Balsamon's voice rode over his thoughts. "You have only one salvation, Randalthor, Luz Theron Kinslayer. I am your only salvation. Serve me, and I will give you the world. Resist, and I will destroy you as I have so often before. But this time, I will destroy you to your very soul. Destroy you utterly and forever."
"I have won again, Luz Theron."
The thought was beyond the void, yet it took an effort to ignore it, not to think of all the lives where he had hurt it. He shifted his sword, and Balsamon readied his staff. For the first time, Rand realized that Balsamon acted as if the Heronmark blade could harm him.
"Steel can't hurt the Dark One."
But Balsamon watched the sword warily. Rand was one with the sword. He could feel every particle of it, tiny bits 1,000 times too small to be seen with the eye. And he could feel the power that suffused him running into the sword as well, threading through the intricate matrices wrought by Aes Sedai during the Trolloc Wars. It was another voice he heard then. Lan's voice.
"There will come a time when you want something more than you want life."
Ingtar's voice. "It is every man's right to choose when to sheathe the sword."
The picture formed of Egwene, collared, living her life as a Damani.
"Threads of my life in danger. Egwene. If Hawkwing gets into Falma, he can save her."
Before he knew it, he had taken the first position of heron waiting in the rushes, balanced on one foot, sword raised high, open and defenseless.
"Death is lighter than a feather, duty heavier than a mountain."
Balsamon stared at him.
Why are you grinning like an idiot, fool? Do you not know I can destroy you utterly?
Rand felt a calmness beyond that of the void. I will never serve you, father of lies. In 1,000 lives, I never have. I know that. I'm sure of it. Come. It is time to die.
Balsman's eyes widened. For an instant, they were furnaces that put sweat on Rand's face. The blackness behind Balsman boiled up around him, and his face hardened.
Then die, worm!
He struck with the staff as with a spear. Rand screamed as he felt it pierce his side, burning like a white-hot poker. The void trembled, but he held on with the last of his strength and drove the Heronmark blade into Balsamon's heart. Balsamon screamed, and the dark behind him screamed. The world exploded in fire.
Chapter 48. First Claiming. Men struggled up the cobblestone street, pushing through crowds that stood white-faced and staring, those who were not screaming hysterically. A few ran, seemingly without any idea of where they were running, but most moved like poorly handled puppets, more afraid to go than to stay. She searched the faces, hoping to find Egwene or Elaine or Nynaeve, but all she saw were Falman. And there was something drawing her on, as surely as if she had a string tied to her. Once she turned to look back. Shan Chan's ships burned in the harbor, and she could see more in flames off the harbor mouth. Many squarish vessels were already small against the setting sun, sailing west as fast as Damani could make the winds drive them, and one small ship was beating away from the harbor, tilting to catch a wind to take it along the coast. Spray. She did not blame Bael Domon for not waiting longer, not after what he had seen. She thought it a wonder he had remained so long. There was one Shan Chan vessel in the harbor not burning, though its towers were black from fires already extinguished. As the tall ship crept toward the harbor mouth, a figure on horseback suddenly appeared around the cliffs skirting the harbor. Riding across the water, Min's mouth fell open. Silver glittered as the figure raised a bow. A streak of silver lanced the boxy ship, a gleaming line connecting bow and ship. With a roar she could hear even at that distance, fire engulfed the foretower anew, and sailors rushed about the deck. Min blinked, and when she looked again, the mounted figure was gone. The ship still slowly made way toward the ocean, the crew fighting the flames. She gave herself a shake and started to climb the street again. She had seen too much that day for someone riding a horse across water to be more than a momentary distraction. Even if it really was Birgitta and her beau, and Arthur Hawkwing, I did see him. I did. In front of one of the tall stone buildings, she stopped uncertainly, ignoring the people who brushed past her as if stunned. It was in there, somewhere, that she had to go. She rushed up the stairs and pushed open the door. No one tried to stop her. As far as she could tell, there was no one in the house. Most of Falma was out in the streets, trying to decide whether they had all gone mad together. She went on through the house, into the garden behind, and there he was. Rand lay sprawled on his back under an oak, face pale and eyes closed, left hand gripping a hilt that ended in a foot of blade that appeared to have been melted at the end. His chest rose and fell too slowly, and not with the regular rhythm of someone breathing normally. Taking a deep breath to calm herself, she went to see what she could do for him. First was to get rid of that stub of a blade. He could hurt himself, or her, if he started thrashing. She pried his hand open and winced when the hilt stuck to his palm. She tossed it aside with a grimace. The heron on the hilt had branded itself into his hand. But it was obvious to her that that was not what had him lying there unconscious. How did he come by that? Nynaeve can put a salve on it later. A hasty examination showed that most of his cuts and bruises were not new. At least the blood had had time to dry in a crust, and the bruises had started to turn yellow at the edges. But there was a hole burned through his coat on the left side. Opening his coat, she pulled up his shirt. Breath whistled through her teeth. There was a wound burned into his side, but it had cauterized itself. What shook her was the feel of his flesh. It had a touch of ice in it. He made the air seem warm. Grabbing his shoulders, she began to drag him toward the house. He hung limp, a dead weight. "Great lummox," she grunted. "You couldn't be short and light, could you? You have to have all that leg and shoulder. I ought to let you lie out here." But she struggled up the steps, careful not to bump him any more than she could avoid, and pulled him inside. Leaving him just within the door, she knuckled the small of her back, muttering to herself about the pattern, and made a hasty search. There was a small bedroom in the back of the house, perhaps a servant's room, with a bed piled high with blankets and logs already laid on the hearth. In moments, she had the blankets thrown back and the fire lit, as well as a lamp on the bedside table. Then she went back for Rand. It was no small task getting him to the room or up onto the bed, but she managed it with only a little hard breathing and covered him up. After a moment, she stuck a hand under the blankets. She winced and shook her head. The sheets were icy cold. He had no body warmth for the blankets to hold. With a put-upon sigh, she wriggled under the covers beside him. Finally, she put his head on her arm. His eyes were still closed, his breathing ragged, but she thought he would be dead by the time she came back if she left to find Nynaeve. "He needs an Aes Sedai," she thought. "All I can do is try to give him a little warmth." For a time, she studied his face. It was only his face she saw. She could never read anyone who was not conscious. "I like older men," she told him. "I like men with education and wit. I have no interest in farms or sheep or shepherds, especially boy shepherds." With a sigh, she smoothed back the hair from his face. He had silky hair. "But then, you aren't a shepherd, are you?" "Not anymore." "Light. Why did the pattern have to catch me up with you? Why couldn't I have something safe and simple, like being shipwrecked with no food and a dozen hungry Aiel men?" There was a sound in the hall, and she raised her head as the door opened. Egwene stood there, staring at them by the light of the fire and the lamp. "Oh," was all she said. Min's cheeks colored. "Why am I behaving like I've done something wrong, fool? I'm keeping him warm. He is unconscious, and he's as cold as ice." Egwene did not come any further into the room. I felt him pulling at me, needing me. Elaine felt it too. I thought it must be something to do with what he is, but Nynaeve didn't feel anything. She drew a deep, unsteady breath. "Elaine and Nynaeve are getting the horses. We found Bella. The Shan Chan left most of their horses behind. Nynaeve says we should go as soon as we can, and Min, you know what he is, don't you, now?" "I know." Min wanted to take her arm from under Rand's head, but she could not make herself move. "I think I do, anyway. Whatever he is hurt. I can do nothing for him except keep him warm. Maybe Nynaeve can. Min, you know, you do know that he cannot marry. He isn't safe for any of us, Min." "Speak for yourself," Min said. She pulled Rand's face against her breast. "It's like Elaine said. You tossed him aside for the White Tower. What should you care if I pick him up?" Egwene looked at her for what seemed a long time. Not at Rand, not at all, only at her. She felt her face growing hotter and wanted to look away, but she could not. "I will bring Nynaeve," Egwene said finally, and walked out of the room with her back straight and her head high. Min wanted to call out, to go after her, but she lay there as if frozen. Frustrated tears stung her eyes. "It's what has to be. I know it. I read it in all of them. Light, I don't want to be part of this." "It's all your fault," she told Rand's still shape. "No, it isn't. But you will pay for it, I think. We're all caught like flies in a spider web. What if I told her there's another woman yet to come, one she doesn't even know? For that matter, what would you think of that, my fine Lord Shepherd? You aren't bad-looking at all, but..." "Light, I don't even know if I'm the one you'll choose. I don't know if I want you to choose me. Or will you try to dandle all three of us on your knee? It may not be your fault, Rand Althor, but it isn't fair." "Not Rand Althor," said a musical voice from the door. Luz Theron Telamon, the dragon reborn. Min stared. She was the most beautiful woman Min had ever seen, with pale, smooth skin and long black hair and eyes as dark as night. Her dress was a white that would make snow seem dingy, belted in silver. All her jewelry was silver. Min felt herself bristle. What do you mean? Who are you? The woman came to stand over the bed. Her movements were so graceful, Min felt a stab of envy, though she had never before envied any woman anything, and smoothed Rand's hair as if Min were not there. He doesn't believe yet, I think. He knows, but he does not believe. I have guided his steps, pushed him, pulled him. He was always stubborn, but this time I will shape him. Ishamael thinks he controls events, but I do. Her finger brushed Rand's forehead as if drawing a mark. Min thought uneasily that it looked like the dragon's fang. Rand stirred, murmuring, the first sound or movement he had made since she found him. Who are you? Min demanded. The woman looked at her, only looked, but she found herself shrinking back into the pillows, clutching Rand to her fiercely. I am called Lanfear, girl. Min's mouth was abruptly so dry she could not have spoken if her life depended on it. One of the Forsaken? No! Light, no! All she could do was shake her head. The denial made Lanfear smile. Luz Theron was and is mine, girl. Tend him well for me until I come for him. And she was gone. Min gaped. One moment she was there, then she was gone. Min discovered she was hugging Rand's unconscious form tightly. She wished she did not feel as if she wanted him to protect her.
Gaunt face set with grim purpose, Bayar galloped with the sinking sun behind him and never looked back. He had seen all he needed to, all he could with that accursed fog. The Legion was dead, Lord Captain Jefferm Bornhald was dead, and there was only one explanation for that. Dark friends had betrayed them. Dark friends like that Perrin of the Two Rivers. That word he had to carry to Dane Bornhald, the Lord Captain's son, with the Children of the Light watching Tarvalin. But he had worse to tell, and to none less than Pedro Niall himself. He had to tell what he had seen in the sky above Falma. He flogged his horse with his reins and never looked back. Chapter 49. What Was Meant to Be. Rand opened his eyes and found himself staring up at sunlight slanting through the branches of a leather leaf, its broad, tough leaves still green despite the time of year. The wind stirring the leaves carried a hint of snow come nightfall. He lay on his back and he could feel blankets covering him under his hands. His coat and shirt seemed to be gone, but something was binding his chest and his left side hurt. He turned his head and Min was sitting there on the ground watching him. He almost did not know her, wearing skirts. She smiled uncertainly. Min, it is you. Where did you come from? Where are we? His memory came in flashes and patches. Old things he could remember, but the last few days seemed like bits of broken mirror, spinning through his mind, showing glimpses that were gone before he could see them clearly.
From Falma, she said. We're 5 days east of there now, and you've been asleep all that time.
Falma. More memory. Matt had blown the horn of Valyr.
Egwene, is she... Did they free her?
He held his breath.
I don't know what they you mean, but she's free. We freed her ourselves.
We? I don't understand.
She's free. At least she is... Nynaeve and Elaine and me.
Nynaeve? Elaine? How? You were all in Falma?
He struggled to sit up, but she pushed him back down easily and stayed there, hands on his shoulders, eyes intent on his face.
Where is she?
Gone.
Min's face colored.
They're all gone. Egwene and Nynaeve and Matt and Hurin and Varen. Huron didn't want to leave you, really. They're on their way to Tar Valon. Egwene and Nynaeve back to their training in the tower, and Matt for whatever the Aes Sedai have to do about that dagger. They took the Horn of Valyr with them. I can't believe I actually saw it. Gone, he muttered. She didn't even wait till I woke up. The red in Min's cheeks deepened, and she sat back, staring at her lap. He raised his hands to run them over his face and stopped, staring at his palms in shock. There was a heron branded across his left palm, too, now, to match the one on his right, every line clean and true. Once the heron to set his path, twice the heron to name him true.
No!
They are gone, she said. Saying no won't change it. He shook his head. Something told him the pain in his side was important. He could not remember being injured, but it was important. He started to lift his blankets to look, but she slapped his hands away. You can't do any good with that. It isn't healed all the way yet. Varen tried healing, but she said it didn't work the way it should.
She hesitated, nibbling her lip.
Moraine says Nynaeve must have done something, or you wouldn't have lived till we carried you to Varen. But Nynaeve says she was too frightened to light a candle. There is something wrong with your wound. You will have to wait for it to heal naturally. She seemed troubled.
Moraine is here?
He barked a bitter laugh.
When you said Varen was gone, I thought I was free of Aes Sedai again. I am here, Moraine said. She appeared, all in blue and as serene as if she stood in the White Tower, strolling up to stand over him.
Min was frowning at the Aes Sedai. Rand had the odd feeling that she meant to protect him from Moraine.
I wish you weren't here, he told the Aes Sedai. As far as I am concerned, you can go back to wherever you've been hiding and stay there.
I have not been hiding, Moraine said calmly. I have been doing what I could, here on Toman Head, and in Falma. It was little enough, though I learned much. I failed to rescue two of my sisters before the Shonchan herded them onto the ships with the leashed ones, but I did what I could.
What you could? You sent Varen to shepherd me, but I'm no sheep, Moraine. You said I could go where I wanted, and I mean to go where you are not.
I did not send Varen, Moraine frowned. She did that on her own. You are of interest to a great many people, Rand. Did Fain find you, or you him?
The sudden change of topic took him by surprise.
Fain? No. A fine hero I make. I tried to rescue Egwene, and Min did it before me. Fain said he would hurt Emmons Field if I didn't face him, and I never laid eyes on him. Did he go with the Shonchan too?
Moraine shook her head.
I do not know. I wish I did. But it is as well you did not find him. Not until you know what he is, at least.
He's a dark friend.
More than that. Worse than that. Padan Fain was the Dark One's creature to the depths of his soul. But I believe that in Shadar Logoth he fell afoul of Mordith, who was as vile in fighting the Shadow as ever the Shadow itself was. Mordith tried to consume Fain's soul, to have a human body again, but found a soul that had been touched directly by the Dark One. And what resulted was neither Padan Fain nor Mordith, but something far more evil, a blend of the two. Fain, let us call him that, is more dangerous than you can believe. You might not have survived such a meeting, and if you had, you might have been worse than turned to the Shadow.
If he is alive, if he did not go with the Shonchan, I have to—
He cut off as she produced his heron-marked sword from under her cloak.
The blade ended abruptly, a foot from the hilt, as if it had been melted.
Memory came rushing back.
I killed him, he said softly. This time I killed him.
Moraine put the ruined sword aside like the useless thing it now was, and wiped her hands together.
The Dark One is not slain so easily,
The mere fact that he appeared in the sky above Falma is more than merely troubling. He should not be able to do that if he is bound as we believe. And if he is not, why has he not destroyed us all? Min stirred uneasily.
In the sky? Rand said in wonder.
Both of you, Moraine said. Your battle took place across the sky in full view of every soul in Falma. Perhaps in other towns on Toman Head, too, if half what I hear is to be believed.
We all saw it,
Min said in a faint voice. She put a hand over one of Rand's comfortingly. Moraine reached under her cloak again and came out with a rolled parchment, one of the large sheets such as the street artists in Falma used. The chalks were a little smudged when she unfurled it, but the picture was still clear enough. A man whose face was a solid flame fought with a staff against another with a sword among clouds where lightning danced, and behind them rippled the dragon banner. Rand's face was easily recognizable.
"How many have seen that?" he demanded. "Tear it up! Burn it!"
The Aes Sedai let the parchment roll back up.
"It would do no good, Rand. I bought that 2 days gone, in a village we passed through. There are hundreds of them, perhaps thousands, and the tale is being told everywhere of how the dragon battled the Dark One in the skies above Falma."
Rand looked at Min. She nodded reluctantly and squeezed his hand. She looked frightened, but she did not flinch away.
"I wonder if that's why Egwene left. She was right to leave."
"The pattern weaves itself around you even more tightly," Moraine said. "You need me now more than ever."
"I don't need you," he said harshly, "and I don't want you. I will not have anything to do with this."
He remembered being called Luz Theron. Not only by Baalzaman, but by Artur Hawkwing.
"I won't. Light, the dragon is supposed to break the world again, to tear everything apart. I will not be the dragon."
"You are what you are," Moraine said. "Already you stir the world. The Black Aja has revealed itself for the first time in 2,000 years. Arad-Doman and Taraban are on the brink of war, and it will be worse when news of Falma reaches them. Kyrian is in civil war."
"I did nothing in Kyrian," he protested. "You can't blame that on me."
"Doing nothing was always a ploy in the great game," she said with a sigh, "and especially as they play it now. You were the spark, and Kyrian exploded like an illuminator's firework. What do you think will happen when word of Falma reaches Arad-Doman and Taraban? There have always been men willing to proclaim for any man who called himself the dragon, but they have never before had such signs as this. There is more. Here." She tossed a pouch on his chest. He hesitated a moment before opening it. Within lay shards of what seemed to be black and white glazed pottery. He had seen their like before.
"Another seal on the Dark One's prison," he mumbled. Min gasped. Her grip on his hand sought comfort now, rather than offering it.
"Two," Moraine said. "Three of the seven are broken now. The one I had, and two I found in the High Lord's dwelling in Falma. When all seven are broken, perhaps even before, the patch men put over the hole they drilled into the prison the Creator made will be torn asunder, and the Dark One will once more be able to put his hand through that hole and touch the world. And the only hope of the world is that the dragon reborn will be there to face him."
Min tried to stop Rand from throwing back the blankets, but he pushed her gently aside.
"I need to walk."
She helped him up, but with a great many sighs and grumbles about him making his wound worse. He discovered that his chest was wrapped round with bandages. Min draped one of the blankets about his shoulders like a cloak. For a moment he stood staring down at the Heronmark sword, what was left of it, lying on the ground.
"Damn sword. My father's sword."
Reluctantly, more reluctantly than he had ever done anything in his life, he let go of the hope that he would discover Tam really was his father. It felt as if he were tearing his heart out. But it did not change the way he felt about Tam, and Emmons Field was the only home he had ever known.
"Fane is the important thing. I have one duty left,
stopping him. The two women had to support him, one on either arm, down to where the campfires were already burning, not far from a road of hard-packed dirt. Loyal was there, reading a book, To Sail Beyond the Sunset, and Perrin staring into one of the fires. The Shinarans were making preparations for their evening meal. Lan sat under a tree, sharpening his sword. The warder gave Rand a careful look, then a nod. There was something else, too. The dragon banner rippled in the wind over the middle of the camp. Somewhere they had found a proper staff to replace Perrin's sapling. Rand demanded,
What is that doing out where anybody who passes by can see it?
It is too late to hide, Rand, Moraine said. It was always too late for you to hide.
You don't have to put up a sign saying, Here I am, either. I'll never find Fain if somebody kills me because of that banner.
He turned to Loyal and Perrin.
I'm glad you stayed. I would have understood if you hadn't.
Why would I not stay? Loyal said. You are even more Taviran than I believed, true, but you are still my friend. I hope you are still my friend.
His ears twitched uncertainly. I am, Rand said, for as long as it's safe for you to be around me, and even after, too. The Ogier's grin nearly split his face in two. I'm staying as well, Perrin said. There was a note of resignation or acceptance in his voice. The wheel weaves us tight in the pattern, Rand. Who would have thought it back in Emmons Field? The Shinarans were gathering around. To Rand's surprise, they all fell to their knees. Every one of them watched him.
We would pledge ourselves to you, Uno said.
The others kneeling with him nodded.
Your oaths are to Ingtar and Lord Agelmar, Rand protested. Ingtar died well, Uno. He died so the rest of us could escape with the horn.
There was no need to tell them, or anyone else, the rest. He hoped that Ingtar had found the light again.
Tell Lord Agelmar that when you return to Faldara.
It is said, the one-eyed man said carefully, that when the dragon is reborn, he will break all oaths, shatter all ties. Nothing holds us now. We would give our oath to you.
He drew his sword and laid it before him, hilt toward Rand, and the rest of the Shinarans did the same.
You battled the Dark One, Massima said.
Massima, who hated him. Massima, who looked at him as if seeing a vision of the light.
I saw you, Lord Dragon. I saw. I am your man to the death.
His dark eyes shone with fervor.
You must choose, Rand, Moraine said. The world will be broken whether you break it or not. Tarmon Gaiden will come, and that alone will tear the world apart. Will you still try to hide from what you are, and leave the world to face the last battle undefended? Choose. They were all watching him, all waiting. Death is lighter than a feather, duty heavier than a mountain. He made his decision.
Chapter 50. After. By ship and horse the stories spread, by merchant wagon and man on foot, told and retold, changing yet always alike at the heart, to Arad Doman and Tarabon and beyond, of signs and portents in the sky above Falma. And men proclaimed themselves for the dragon, and other men struck them down and were struck down in turn. Other tales spread of a column that rode from the sinking sun across Almuth Plain. 100 bordermen, it was said, a thousand heroes come back from the grave to answer the call of the Horn of Valir. 10,000. They had destroyed a legion of the Children of the Light entire. They had thrown Artur Hawkwing's returned armies back into the sea. They were Artur Hawkwing's armies returned. Toward the mountains they rode, toward the dawn. Yet one thing every tale had the same. At their head rode a man whose face had been seen in the sky above Falma, and they rode under the banner of the dragon reborn. And men cried out to the Creator, saying, O light of the heavens, light of the world, let the promised one be born of the mountain, according to the prophecies, as he was in ages past and will be in ages to come. Let the Prince of the Morning sing to the land that green things will grow, and the valley give forth lambs. Let the arm of the Lord of the Dawn shelter us from the dark, and the great sword of justice defend us. Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time. From Charal Drianan Te Kalamon, The Cycle of the Dragon, author unknown, The Fourth Age.